How's it going? How you been?
Let's get started.
What's scrapping?
Yo, yo.
You are now tuned in to Al Joe the Funk Master. Watch your grill, yoga knocked out cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. Whether mount or off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet fuck a name and a fame, only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't shit.
Motherfucker. Welcome back, you weekly scrappers. This is episode 75. Let's go. Okay, let's get serious. Can't be sitting like that. That's very, very awkward. But let's do this over. I couldn't take myself seriously.
The outtake roll.
I'll just start.
It's episode 75.
I'm never gonna give a number. I'm just gonna say it's gonna bring it in.
Yeah. All right. Run it back. Running it back in 5, 4.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the weekly scraps. Oh, man. We got a lot to talk about. Obviously, not too much in the fight world, but still plenty of tea, as they call it, the young folks. First off, I hope you guys are having a beautiful and safe start to the week. It is now Wednesday. Wednesday. All these days feel the same. It's like Groundhog Day. I'm telling you, this quarantine is getting the best of all of us, especially me. That's why I'm learning how to do new skills. Got my gym almost done. Finished building that out. Just put the vapor barrier down. I painted the concrete floor with a sealer. I don't think there's any mold or any type of moisture that gets in, but I want to be double cautious because obviously buying carpet padding and buying mats are very expensive. So the last thing I want to do is potentially risk that by having it under on the ground for God knows how long and just collecting dust, dirt, and all kinds of yucky type of material and fungus down there. So sealed it up, watched a couple YouTube videos on that, did the thing, boom, 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 done. Vapor barriers down, boom, 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 done, taped it up. Now the only thing I got to do is finish padding with the carpet padding. I did one layer already. And I got to do the two more layers, maybe just one more. I got to see because it feels pretty soft already. Obviously, it's concrete. And when I put the padding on top for the wrestling mats, I believe that's 1.58 inches. So it's pretty thick. So when I take people down or people take me down, you have a nice soft landing spot so we can get some real training in. And I can't wait to really up the level of my funk tutorials. I'm going to start a school probably online for like everything MMA to give people real insight and lessons on techniques and all type of things that I believe in terms of philosophies on the MMA fight game. So stay tuned for that. There's definitely going to be some good content coming out. I got my wall mats coming in soon. Shout out to ResiLite because they hooked it up. I got quotes from other places. Ridiculous. It's like the quarantine hit and these guys are starting to up the pricing. I got an offer for a 50% deal and the quote was almost $3,000. I got a one car garage, $3,000, $2,900 for two wall mats, 16 feet by 13 feet. And the ground is about 10 by 13. And I got a quote for almost $3,000. That's insane. With ResiLite, I got the 10 by 10 mat in stock, ready to ship to go. I got the last one that they had in the warehouse. That was about $650 with tax and shipping. And it was like $480 when I bought it online. And then the carpet padding, of course, and the wall mats. So everything ran me in total from their website about $1,700. That sounds more like a 50% off deal if you ask me. But again, shout out to those guys. Thank you for hooking it up. So if you guys need somebody, obviously I'm not getting paid to do this. I'm just doing this because I think out of the goodness of my heart, those guys hooked it up and they're not price gouging. And knowing that everyone's buying home gyms and trying to, I don't want to say rip them off, but you're taking advantage of the people who don't really have work to pay for this. So that I felt like that wasn't cool at all. So I stand by those guys who are doing the right thing and make sure kids can still wrestle, because that's a big part of my upbringing and things like that. So thank you guys, WrestleLight.com. But other than that, like I said, I got no discount code or no shit like that. I just fuck with them. But other than that, man, we got some stuff we want to talk about. We got this May 9th card coming up. UFC 249. We're going to bring in my guy, Cody Murrow, and we're going to get into the goods. Let's talk about that take. Look at this guy out here with the Boston hat on, and this Tom Brady'd out right now.
Oh yeah,
I don't know how to feel as a Giants fan. I don't know how to feel.
You should feel good. Tom Brady is not a rival the Patriots, or not with the Patriots anymore. Rival the Giants. He's with the Bucks. You know, you can love him. You can learn to love Tom.
This is true. I think it's time to burn the jerseys. Did I say that out loud?
I got plenty, bro. I got you. You want to drop down as much money as you're dropping on this home gym? I can give you one.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. He's going down to the Bucks now, and we're gonna see if Tom Brady is really as good as he's always been. No disrespect, I'm just saying. I think when you have an O-line as great as New England's and a great coaching system, it's really good to look like a superstar year in and year after year. And I always said that, I'm like, if Eli Manning had a line like New England, he would be killing it right now. But obviously we don't, and we're struggling just to get back into that contention. But still always gonna be bleeding that big blue. Big
blue. You got to.
Tom Brady's kryptonite. Don't ever forget.
Oh, we can't forget. That's the worst part. That's why we hate the Giants.
Yeah. But yeah, man, let's get into this May 9th card. We got some big fights I saw. First one I can remember off the bat is Rosinho Jair. I always call him Jair. Is it Jair?
It's Jairzinho Rozenstrike.
Jairzinho Rozenstrike. Why do I keep calling him Jair? Like Jair Rodriguez.
Well, because it's spelled that way. You're not that.
Yeah. So he's fighting he fought Overeem already. He's fighting Francis Ngannou.
Ngannou, and Ngannou's been really lobbying for that to be an interim title fight. So I don't know how much legs that has, but I mean, if that wasn't a number one contender fight already, then slap it on.
It should. I don't see any problem with that. The whole thing, DC's potentially going to walk away from the sport after one more fight. Hopefully, it's a trilogy fight with Stipe Miocic. I think that fight has to go down. For him to go and fight for the interim title while Stipe's out on the front line being a first responder, and him not getting that trilogy match and potentially risking taking a loss to either Ngannou or Rosinho. I think he beats Rosinho. I think Ngannou might pose a little bit more of a physical problem for DC. But obviously those guys aren't fine. I'm just talking hypotheticals here. But I think DC has earned the right to get a rematch with Stipe Miocic. It's not like someone just coming off the couch after 4 years, just commentating and then just being granted a title shot. But, you know, he's had wars with Stipe, and I think, a war. The first one was, I wouldn't really necessarily call that a war. He capitalized on a position and landed a money shot that put him down. But I think he's the next guy for sure. But I can see the argument for why Ngannou thinks that should be an interim title shot. Because who else is there at the heavyweight division besides Curtis Blaydes? But he did lose to Francis Ngannou.
Well, and I think part of it is playing the game, right? He knows that the UFC needs these belts. He needs these headliner events now to make up for this lost time. So, you know, I can't fault him for that. Do I agree that it should be interim title fight? No, but you can't shame the guy for trying. He's right now running off as a close to a minus 300 favorite against Rozenstrike. So,
gotta talk that talk.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's tough. I mean, heavyweights, I can't lay money on heavyweights like that, man. You never know what could fucking happen with them.
Yep, I agree.
So we won't break down the card. We did the UFC 249 breakdown, and then within the video production of the episode, the fight got canceled. So we're not going to do that just yet. May 9th is a couple weeks out. We have some time, but some of the crazy matchups as I'm looking here on best fight odds of the card compiled. Nico Price versus Vicente Luque is staying. We were really high about that fight. That is just an absolute banger. Coming off as the second fight of the night. When that fight's the second fight of the night, you know that there's going to be fucking fireworks.
Yeah, there's a lot of good fights, man. They really did their homework in stacking this card. I mean, to have three cards fall through and then to take all those people who are pretty much in training camp and pretty much at the end of their training camp, put those people all and spread them out with the biggest names that you could get, and then put them in one big blockbuster card. And what do you have? You have Magic. You're going to have people who are fighting much earlier than they used to. And either way, man, it's going to be great must-watch TV, because obviously we're sitting home. We ain't doing shit. So everyone's going to be tuning into this. So it's going to be one of the biggest and baddest cards. And people are going to have the opportunity to really become household names when they perform, after they perform, when the mic is in their face. And from there, it's their opportunity to shine and capitalize on those key moments of opportunities to really speak your mind and state your case and let the people know, talk to the fans and let the fans know who you are and what you're about. And is your opportunity to really make do with that. So I'm really looking forward to that. And of course, you got like Bryce Mitchell. He's fighting Charles Rosa, I believe, on that card as well. First fight of the night.
Yep.
There's so many people. They got Thug Nasty, straight out of Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
And
you don't want to forget it. I ain't leaving Arkansas. Friend of the podcast, Bryce Mitchell. I was definitely going to bring him up.
And then the camo shorts. Reebok, I ain't going to ask you again.
What are they doing? What are they doing? Get the guys some camo shorts. You don't think people in Arkansas got money? Come on.
I know, it's crazy.
Reebok dropping the ball, per usual.
I rock some camo shorts. If they had that option, it'd be ready for war, baby.
Well, why not even just do the digital camo? A little green and yellow digital camo, huh?
It'd be cool. I think all those variations would be cool. I think that would be very indigenous to him.
Yeah. Well, I just think, I mean, they can do nothing but improve their designs. I mean, the gray Reebok combat shorts look like they got cum stains all over them. So I think they got to redo that design.
Man, I remember from that movie, I forget what the name of the movie. She's like, boys are disgusting when they're at that age. The other day I grabbed the towel and I broke it in half. I was like, oh my God, that is so graphic and so disgusting. I'm like, I'm trying to visualize that. I was like, dude, what is that? Like, who thinks about that? I broke the towel in half. I'm like, oh, Lord. There's a lot of action going on in there. A lot of action.
Well, a lot of action that I'm sure a black belt as yourself can go wild over. Maybe have some stains. Alexei Olenek versus Fabricio Werdum. The return of Werdum after, 18 months on USADA suspension, something like that?
Yeah, I see Werdum winning that one. So that should be a good fight.
I mean, at the time when Werdum lost to Stipe, there was a talk of him being the best heavyweight of all time. I mean, let's not forget.
Yeah, look what he was doing to people. But then he ran into Stipe.
Literally
ran into Stipe. I mean, I know what running into someone is like, but goddamn, he literally ran into Stipe. I was like, bro, you just went from the king of the mountain, arguably almost the greatest of heavyweight of all time, and you literally just threw, I don't even know what to call it. Like, you ran, you ran away. I don't know.
I mean, let's play fantasy matchmaker. Imagine he wins that fight and this Ngannou rise still continues. Like, what does Werdum do to Ngannou on the ground when he fought Stipe in Boston? Like, it
pull guard.
It's not even a question. It's like, that is a first round sub waiting to happen.
Yeah. Pull guard, go Barambolo, something. Cause he ain't standing up and striking with him.
No. Well, unless he didn't learn that Stipe lesson, which, I mean, who knows? That could have been a blessing in disguise for him.
I don't know how he does that with his face. They were making fathead mask of him lip. I was like, dude, what is that? But it was pretty funny. But yeah, man, I'm not too excited about that. Like, that fight's not like the one that really gets me going. I mean, you had Amanda Nunes taking on Felicia Spencer, and then that one just got scratched. Amanda's no longer fighting on that card. And this is what we were talking about. We don't know who's going to actually be on the card come May 9th. And I'm seeing now that it's supposed to be taking place in Florida. But I don't know who else. I mean, we obviously know the main event, the co-main event. I don't know any other sleeper fights that you're
so
more excited about.
One fight that did get added that I wanted to bring up, Anthony Pettis versus Cowboy Cerrone 2.
Oh, that's on this card.
That is on this card.
I feel like Cerrone needs a little more time to let his body rest, man. That's just my personal opinion. This is going to be at 55, I'm assuming, right? Or are these guys going to do a fight at 7?
I would assume it's at 55.
I mean, I don't know if Cowboy's really trying to make that run again at 70, but
yeah,
I can see him arguably trying to do it. But I don't know. This is a fun fight still. Fan favorites. I'm still going to I think I can't see Anthony Pettis changing his game plan from the first time, which was attacking the body. I could see him doing that again. We all know Cowboy, when you come right at him, it seems like he tends to falter. He can weather the storm. I'm just really shocked by that one with Conor McGregor still. Still, my mind is still blown by that. Obviously, I know it's a hard shoulder strike. I've done shoulder strikes. I've been hit with shoulder strikes, and they suck. Yeah. So I know what that felt like. I never had my nose broken from it, so I could not imagine what that part felt like. But I know it definitely had some pop behind it, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I just felt like he has all these injuries from being in all these wars. He had a war with Ally Quinta. He had a crazy fight with Tony Ferguson. He had a crazy knockout fight with Justin Gaethje, then lost. I'm like, dude, then lost to Conor McGregor. I'm like, dude, you have to kind of let the body reset, reset your mind a little bit. That's just my personal opinion. Like I said, still a fun fight, but I think it's Pettis' fight to win, to lose, I should say. But we'll see what happens. Because I think both those guys are in a similar point in their careers where it's like more so fun fights and fights that get them up and get them excited. So I think this is a fight that will get them both excited. It's not like fighting a no-name guy who's looking to make their name off of them, you know? So I think they're both at that point in their career. So either way, I think it's a fun fight for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to note that they're both coming off loss streaks. I mean, Cerrone's lost 3 in a row. Pettis has lost his last 2.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, you know, we're going to have to keep belaboring the point, but how does your training change in a quarantine? Tony doesn't really change much. Guy like Khabib changes his whole lifestyle up. Like, it's kind of a different spectrum as far as fighters are concerned. We know that if Donald Cerrone walks in there, his training probably hasn't changed at all. He's got his ranch. He's got all of his coaches all set up. Probably been doing the same shit throughout this whole thing, especially knowing how hard-nosed and hard-headed we know he is just as a person.
Yeah, Pettis, I agree.
You know, has he been able to train with Duke as much, you know, at Rufus Sport in Milwaukee? I don't know. I don't have anybody there to tell me otherwise.
Yeah, that's the question mark. And I'm going to say a lot of people are making judgment calls based on their situations, whether they got family members, loved ones, old people that they want to be close with just in case something happens. Because obviously the coronavirus is a serious thing. The people are recovering. Thank God. You know, not everyone's just getting in and dying. But still, at the same time, you just don't want to risk being away, and then if they did get it, you don't have the opportunity to be around them and comfort them, that type of thing. So I think some people are taking that, bowing out of competition just to kind of hang back and do the right thing for on what makes them feel better or makes their mind feel more at peace. But I know we do, next up, we do have the co-main event, Henry Cejudo getting his wish and taking on Dominic Cruz. And that's going to be a good fight. I, you know, believe it or not, I was upset about it. Obviously, for many reasons, I think they're justified. But it's still a good fight. I can never deny that. Dominic Cruz is always a gamer. We always know that he comes back from these long layoffs. He's done it before. And what he did to Mizugaki was unprecedented. To the way he took him down. I know Cody Garbrandt starched him in the first minute as well. But it was different. He came in with the flow. Mizugaki couldn't touch him. He gave him a chance to hit him a couple times. I know he's bobbing, weaving, looking like Ali out there. The next thing you know, he throws a right hand. He does like a duck under off of it, takes him down, dumps him down, and from there takes his back halfway against the cage and unleashes a barrage of right hands that pretty much puts him unconscious. I mean, he's on the cage being held up, but he was out. He was out. So, and then he comes back and he beats TJ Dillashaw after that. So it's a good fight. My issue is he hasn't fought in 4 years and he's older now. And his last fight was a loss and was a very dominant and one-sided loss. That's my only issue. So I get what he's done. He is the greatest of all time. I have said he was my idol. And obviously that was about 5 years ago. The guy was my idol 5 years ago. I don't have any idols in the game right now that I'm like, yo, I look up to this guy. I'm not like that. I'm my own idol. You know, and that might sound weird to some people, but people don't get that. Growing up the way I grew up, I didn't have posters on my wall and things like that and idolize basketball players and things like that. I just wanted to be great. I just wanted to be an athlete. I would just want to be my own man. I never had people. I mean, I did look up to The Rock, but it wasn't, I wouldn't recall looking up to. I was more so just a big fan, you know, But it wasn't like, yo, I want to be like The Rock. I want to be a WWE wrestler. I never had those thoughts. I was just never like that. You know, I always just want to be good and want people to remember me for me being good, not for me wanting to be like somebody else and following their shoes. You know, I looked up to Uriah Faber, GSP, John Jones, Forrest Griffin, and Dominic Cruz. Those guys were all of my box of influence, who influenced my fighting style. And I, you know, I wanted the heart of Forrest Griffin. I wanted the style and the technical prowess of GSP, you know, being smart. I wanted the ground and pound of Uriah Faber. And then I wanted the innovative skill set of John Jones. And then I wanted the footwork and cardio of Dominic Cruz. So I looked at all these guys as that. It was never like, yo, this is the idol I, you know, oh my God, I'm starstruck by him. I'm not starstruck by a motherfucker at all. I'm ready to punch the guy in his fucking face. You know, and I've been asking to fight the guy for so long. But again, this is not about me. It's about him. He's getting a title fight. It's a good fight. I'm excited about it. And I just hope he doesn't squander the opportunity and he really goes out there and puts on a good performance. In my personal opinion, I'm leaning towards Henry, who has had a full training camp, hasn't been injured, or should I say coming back from an injury and had more time to recover, get his body in shape. I think the odds are in his favor, but you can never count out the much bigger man and former champ and probably the greatest of all time bantamweight in Dominic Cruz.
Well, I think that was a great breakdown. I don't know if I can really add anything. I think a big part of what
you left the room.
Well, I think a big part of what you described that I was going to bring up was the style, because if you look throughout the top 10 of the bantamweight division, every single person is influenced by Dominic Cruz. Every single person.
We all watched him. We watched him.
Right. And it's like, look at the style of a Sandhagen. Look at the footwork of a Aljamain Sterling. You know, all of these different fighters have taken pieces of what Dom does and put them into their game. So I think, while I agree with you, I think Henry has the better shot on paper to finish this out with everything you laid out, the training camp, the activity, the style, I think is a big thing when you break down that inactivity given the wrestling. We know how wrestling really isn't like riding a bike. You got to get those reps in. You got to get the hours back into the mats before you really feel comfortable. But I think what it really illuminates is, you know, if we're talking back about Dominic Cruz's loss to Garbrandt, that year is the first time Dom had fought three times in,
ever.
I want to say, since I was in high school. Yeah, exactly. It's crazy think about, A, you know, did that play into it? I don't think so. I think he kind of just got lame ducked, similar to how Woodley was against Usman. Didn't show up on the night, got kryptonited a little bit, and that's what happened.
Like Madden, use that lame duck.
Right. But I think the interesting part with him back in the mix is, let's say Cruz comes out of this healthy or even winning. I mean, winning, kind of throw everything out the window. We're probably going to get the immediate title rematch, whatever. But what does that do for the division? Like, what kind of crazy matchups at 135 do we get now with Dominic Cruz in the mix? Whereas before we were talking about, you know, before, wasn't it, you know, John Lineker, you know, kind of that opposite of Dom Cruz style, just heavy handed, was in 135. I think it's kind of interesting to see, A, we know the bantamweight division is one of the best, if not the best in the UFC. Now we get to see what it looks like when a legend comes back into the fold.
Yeah, I agree. And the one thing I have to note, and I didn't even notice this until I was listening to Brandon Shaw's podcast, and it was, the dude's not even ranked. He was talking with Luke Thomas. I was like, I completely overlooked that. The dude's not even ranked. Like, where does he even fall in the rankings right now? I know they moved Aldo up from 9 to 6 just to make his name look a little bit more glamorous on paper for being warranted the title shot and having to raise a close fight with Marlon Moraes. But you got these guys coming down. You got Frankie Edgar coming down. It's just a big shit show right now because no one knows where everyone really stands until the dust finally settles. And again, we're talking about footwork and everything. I know that Garbrandt fight, he's pretty much, he likes to say he doesn't make excuses, but everyone has an excuse. Even when you win, there is an excuse for why you could have done something better. Let's just call it what it is. You don't just lose because you lost. Sometimes you lose because the other guy is just better than you. But even when you say that, you still know, like, well, if I had done this better, maybe I could have done a little bit better and maybe the outcomes changes. Maybe I don't win, but maybe the outlook or the total picture of the fight looks a little bit different. So it's not making an excuse to a certain extent. And, you know, some things are very valid. They hold water. And he said his feet were pretty beat up. And I mean, I would imagine doing three title fights, 25 minutes each fight, that's a long time fighting. And we all know how he trains. He does a lot of incline running, marathon type of training, sprint workouts. And I know this because I got inside information where I found out what he was doing from one of the interviews that Cruz did previously in like a couple of years ago. And I looked into it and I figured out what he was doing and I added it to my own game. And I don't do it as religiously as he does, because obviously it takes a toll on your knees. It takes a toll on your feet. And I'm not a big runner myself, but that was one of the question marks that I was looking at. And maybe that was a real thing, or maybe he was, because he was just really emotional and got really involved in that fight where he was a little bit more hyped and amped up and trying to go forward and put on a pace that he's not used to fighting, or a style that he's not used to fighting. He's a counter fighter. He's not an offensive fighter where he's starting the attacks first. He's using a lot of fakes, trying to draw out your attacks. Once you overcommit or he catches you frozen in some type of step where you don't know which way to turn, which way to move, because you can't figure out which way he's turning or moving, that's where he capitalizes and starts to open up with strikes, where he starts to do that. You know, so that's what it looks like when I see him fight. It was, you know, it's just he does his thing. He does a hop step and he fakes and comes back the other way. You know, so I've broken this thing down all the time. Who has success with him? TJ Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt. What did they do? They stayed in the center. They backtracked and took small steps, and they start angling off halfway through that third round is when TJ started to have success. Fourth and fifth rounds, the rounds I thought he won, but he changed his game plan and his style later on in the fight. Had he had fought like that early on, instead of being super aggressive and trying to touch a moving target, you end up looking stupid and silly and you're just missing left and right. So that's the game plan. And when I look at Cejudo, he's a little pit bull, man. You know, and that's my thing. I think he's tougher than when people give him credit for. And I know he's a tough fight, even for myself. But I think styles make fights. I think sometimes people neutralize each other. And sometimes you got to fight almost a boring fight to really get a W sometimes, because you can't go in there guns blazing. It's almost like, for example, it is Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero. He's waiting. Izzy's waiting for Romero to open up so that he can counter him. But if Romero doesn't open up and give him the opportunities to counter, then we don't have a fight. Someone's got to be willing to be the first one to start the dance, to start the waltz. And to be quite frank, I you know, a fight like that where it's a duck is because no man wants to open up and exploit their game plan and try to make the fight exciting because the other person is not falling for their traps or their setups. But either way, I know this was a long-winded section on this, but it's a good fight, man. I'm excited about it. The one thing I did want to say was, I did come out and verbally assault Henry Cejudo at Dominic Cruz's expense. And I don't think I was even that malicious about it. I was just kind of like, tag Dana. I was like, hey, Dana, when Brittle Cruz can't make it to the octagon, I'm just a phone call away. And I'm making little verbal jabs here and there, but it's all good fun. At the end of the day, I'm actually one of the only guys who actually gave the guy respect for everything. And at the end of the day, Garbrandt has called him brittle. All these guys has called him brittle. And he blocks me. I saw that he blocked Garbrandt too in the past. And he was like, yeah, I can't see what you're doing in training because you blocked me, you little pussy or whatever he called him. And he's like, yeah, because I don't need you looking at my shit. I'm like, oh my God, what a freaking drama queen. Are we in high school? I don't want you looking at my paper, my test paper show. I'm going to block you because you're being a bad person. It's like, dude, we're fighters. If you're as mentally tough as you say and as mentally strong, that shouldn't affect you unless it really does get under your skin that much where you really start having doubts about your training or your preparation because X, Y, and Z is fighters saying something and you don't like it. That's a fight game. We say shit that the person doesn't like. We're going to punch each other. Who gives a fuck?
Well, I think that's any game, right? I mean, we're from kind of a similar generation and upbringing where it's like, yo, you can say whatever you want, but understand that it has consequences. But
yeah, 100%.
If you come from that background, you understand, I'll say what I want. Like, the shit coming out of my mouth is checked. Like, I know what's coming out. And
yeah,
it would be like if you got butthurt over somebody being like, yo, your shoes look mad corny. Like, if you thought your shoes didn't look mad corny, you wouldn't give a fuck. Clearly, yeah. Clearly, part of you thinks your shoes look a little corny because you're getting butthurt someone saying your shoes look like shit. So
yeah, it's weird, man. And I, you know, my the other side of that is like, well, how do you build the fight, or how do you build a potential fight if you're blocking your opponents and they don't get to chirp at you and get people invested by you leaving little comments? You're dropping like little crumbs, and hopefully the fans are biting on it. Like, yo, he was talking mad shit. This fight's gonna be amazing. Blah blah blah. You know, racking up that slow building interest. And obviously he's got a bigger platform, fortunately for him. So maybe he feels all he has to do is post that I'm fighting and he doesn't have to really go into a verbal assault like he did before with TJ Dillashaw, Team Alpha Fails, as he called them, Cody Garbrandt, you know, all these guys he was talking shit to. Now all of a sudden it seems like his tune is changing and he just wants to be about peace and prosperity and love for everybody. I was gonna say something, but I'm like, I might get some backlash for that. But, but it is what it is, man. Either way,
back in.
I just hope it's a good fight, you know. Because if he wastes the opportunity for me to make some good money, I would be really, really fucking upset. And obviously, the fight game, anything can happen. But this fight, if I were to have gotten it as a title challenger, it would have been double. Almost 2.5 times what I make now with a win. So that's a significant pay bump. And obviously I live in New York, so I would, that money would have been almost cut directly in half. But it would have been good money, man. That's life-changing money for someone like me who doesn't really spend a ton of money anyway. So
yeah. Well, that's my only Florida or Nevada. I mean,
yeah,
little whatever piece of the pie that you can avoid getting cut out. I mean, I'm a business owner too. I understand the struggle of New York, New Jersey taxes. So
shit's ridiculous. But that's it, man. Life-changing money, man. I think anyone will understand if someone else comes into their job and because they were there before you, but you're now there and you're busting your ass as a carpenter or as a plumber, and someone else who hasn't been there and decide to hang it up and comes back and they get that promotion over you to be the new GM of the franchise, you're going to be like, what the fuck? Anybody in their right mind would be upset about that. That's money. That's vacation time. That's X, Y, Z. That's pension. That's everything.
Yeah.
So for people who act like, oh, you're being a drama queen and you're complaining, shut the fuck up. I'm like, dude, you're stupid.
Yeah.
And either way, I don't give a fuck what you say. I'm going to still sing my tune and chirp this motherfucker and all these other motherfuckers until I get a goddamn fight. And it is what it is. Hopefully it's either Frankie Edgar or Corey Sandhagen, and one of those guys can get these hands and these feet.
Yeah. I mean, at least somebody fun to chirp at, you know? Like, yeah. Nobody wants to sit here and talk shit to Marlon. Like, Marlon's too nice.
Well, Marlon's too nice. Frankie Edgar's too nice. Corey Sandhagen's too nice. If I fight any one of those guys again, there's going to be nothing to say at all, because they're not going to give me anything to work with. And then I'm just going to look like a complete bully for talking shit. So it's just going to be like, well, I'm just talking to myself. And I don't know. I got a way I could kind of play up on it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then you saw what they did to Woodley when he started going that road too. The fans are ruthless sometimes.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, they pay the bills, but they don't pay the, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, like you said, imagine you walk in off this quarantine to a job and someone goes, yo, this guy who quit 3 years ago wants to come back and he's going to take this job over you. You're going to be like, what the fuck?
Like, over my dead body, motherfucker.
Yeah, you're like,
and then your
that.
Boss just goes, nah, this is what I'm gonna do. And then you're like, damn, well, what do?
Yeah, right. Fuck.
What? Yeah. And then obviously we got the main event, Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson. That's gonna be a fun fight. I mean, we broke that down. Let's just hope everything stays intact. I don't think we need to even break that down again, but it's just a fun fight card all the way around. There's a lot of good potential. Some potential bomb burners. And yeah, man, I'm just super pumped about it. And I cannot wait on for this for you.
Some damn sports back, bro. Anything.
Something.
I heard NHL is coming back in July. You know, when's the next time we're going to have UFC fans at an event? I don't know.
But July.
Yeah.
Shit.
Well, and their season's usually over early June, too. I mean, NBA, you're going to look at like a summer tournament. I have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hoping that the NFL season stays intact. Got two teams now. It's fucking
dope. So do you out here growing that beard and growing that lettuce on your head, as Anik likes to call it.
Oh yeah, it's a New England thing. I'm not even gonna show off the lettuce, bro. It's terrible.
The lettuce.
So one thing I was gonna ask you before we hop on off of here, and something I think you'll have a lot of insight to. So Tony Ferguson, even though the fight was canceled for the 18th, still made weight. Now mm-hmm. we're 3 weeks out from him having to do a cut again. I heard DC say something similar where he said, I used to do test cuts for 205, 3 months out, because every time I did a test cut, I'd be 3 to 4 pounds lighter. And then that was 4 pounds less than I had to cut the next 2 weeks or something like that. So
yeah.
From your perspective, as someone who does cut a lot of weight and is very lean at 135, once you get down there, what do you think are the pros and cons of Tony doing that? And then what was your initial reaction when you saw that?
Well, my thing is, first off, I think Tony Ferguson doing this is completely about the mental space. I think he's showing how mentally strong he is and what he's willing to put his body through to get his hand raised in a fist fight. And I think that says a lot. We have David Goggins, who went jogging. He did his own personal video talking about Tony Ferguson and just saying like he's getting up to run just because this motherfucker is getting up to go make weight when there's a canceled fight, because he's just so adamant on showing like, yo, he's strong up here and no one's going to be able to beat him up here. And once he has you thinking that, now he's coming forward with pressure, punches, elbows and kicks, submission attempts, takedown attempts, and he's going to be in your face nonstop. Now, that's a good pro to get in your opponent's head like, yo, this motherfucker is crazy. These motherfuckers making weight for no goddamn reason. I ain't doing that shit, because personally, I ain't doing that shit. But Tony Ferguson is the type of guy to make weight when there is no fight, because he wants to prove something. And that's what I'm super pumped about. I think the cons about that is when you're dehydrated like that, you can't train the way you normally train because you have a lot less body fat on you. So it makes you a little bit more prone to injury, if that makes sense. If there's less cushioning on your bones, your joints, your ligaments, all that, you're more prone to injury. So yes, when you do cut the weight, it is easier for you to maintain that. But are you really going to go through a training camp where you're training at 160 when you're getting your body acclimated to be that much smaller? And when it's fight night comes, you want to be, at least for myself, I put on 15 pounds, sometimes 17. So I would imagine that Ferguson would want to be back around 75. That's like reasonable. Obviously, he's a bigger person. I'm fighting at 135. I cut down from about 68 over the course of the training camp. The last week, I'm doing about 10 pounds, 10, 12 pounds. And for him, I would imagine if I'm getting back up to 52, he probably would want to get back up to like 75. That's like a comfortable range, I would imagine, and something that's realistically possible for him to get to and not feel completely bloated and all that. But I do notice when I cut weight and I try to eat the next day, my stomach is smaller. Everything is shrunk. So for me to put weight on, it takes a little bit more time. Yeah, I could gouge myself and just binge eat all day, but it hurts. It doesn't feel good. You feel bloated. And this part of it is very important. These next 2.5 weeks for Tony Ferguson, how does he manage putting on that weight? And is he going to put on a bulk load, or is he going to just maintain the 10 pound difference, 65? Very doable. I think if he can maintain that and have safe training, he should be fine. But at the end of the day, I think those are the pros and cons. You never want to deplete your body of its nutrients like that for long periods of time, because what do? You weaken your immune system. Now you're more susceptible to health issues in terms of sicknesses and diseases. And what do we have what are we in the midst of? A pandemic with the COVID-19. So you put yourself at risk doing those things. But at the end of the day, I think it lets his opponents know like, yo, this is a different type of animal. You're going to have to put him out if you want to beat Tony Ferguson.
Woo! I'm fired up. Need some damn
guy's a maniac, dude. He's a special maniac that we love to watch. I tell you that.
I'll tell you what, I would pay to watch a Merab Tony Ferguson training session. I get my money's worth. It'd be 4 hours, 5 hours long, but
yeah, it would be. It definitely would be.
But yeah, so I think that was a nice little recap. We wanted to make sure we got the fans something to snack on while they're killing time here in the quarantine. There will be plenty of stuff coming up on the Funkmaster MMA YouTube channel, including a little COVID-19 recovery guide from Miss Rebecca Cruz. I thought that was a great piece. I don't know what's going on with you personally, but I'm really excited to see what you're doing with your gym and the new technique talk videos that are going to come out of there. I think there's going to be some great stuff coming out of this quarantine for the weekly scraps and for Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Yeah, we definitely broke down everything with Rebecca. And it's kind of the shitty part about the whole thing was that obviously one of my roommates, I told Will that she just got her test results back and let you guys know she is positive. I felt it was my duty to make sure I let these guys know so that they keep their distance and I don't risk them getting sick and then them risking getting other people sick. Okay, I did my part. So then Will now then goes and texts Steve Lee, who is my other roommate, who wasn't really staying at the house. He was going back and forth, going to hang out with this girl, going to hang out with some Pumi and those other guys. And unfortunately, I wish Will would have told me he was going to tell him, because if he wasn't staying at the house, it wasn't none of his business. So he told him, and of course, like high school, he went and told every single body at the gym. And what happens when everyone knows? No one says anything. No one checks up. No one asks how's X, Y, and Z doing. I actually went out of my way and I FaceTimed Dennis. And then I said, yo, let's see how many people we could FaceTime. I saw that you could do more than one. We FaceTime Al. Then we FaceTime Weidman. And we tried to get Ray on the phone, but we couldn't get Ray. So we got Steve Lee on the phone. We couldn't get Vellante on the phone. So we talked about everything. And obviously, we went a little back and forth. And I was like, yo, bro, can you guys like not go out telling people this stuff? Obviously, she's home. It's multiple reasons. People look at you different. They treat you different. It's almost like they think you have the plague when that's not the case. She's quarantining herself. I'm quarantining myself, obviously taking care of her, doing my due diligence, following the CDC guidelines, which everybody else and their mothers were doing. So if I'm doing the same thing and you're taking the same precautions, I was kind of getting like backlash and everyone was kind of saying, well, you have to have it. She has it. You have to have it. I'm like, it doesn't work like that. You don't just have it because she's there in your presence. She has to like, I have to literally like ingest something or inhale something into my system and have a weak immune system where my body can't fight it. And now I am infected full on through my body and I'm showing symptoms of sickness, but that was never the case. And I just felt it was a little shitty that people were acting like they didn't know, that did know. And it was like, well, you never know if that could be the last time you ever talk to that individual. Right? Because we do know the coronavirus doesn't just kill older people. It's killing young people too. People who are fit, people who are deemed healthy. So my whole thing was, what if that was the last time you got to talk to Rebecca Cruz? Now what? Do you feel shitty that you never reached out and say, hey, how you doing? I hope all is well, just checking up on you. Or now you're going to go on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and write these long-winded posts, blah, blah, blah. Man, this person was so amazing and it was great really knowing them. They were such a great spirit heart. Man, if I could have gone back in time and really just took the time out to check on them, get those last few words in. It's just like, be human. Be the little bit of positivity that we need. People turn the news, and this is why I don't watch the news so often, because people turn the news and it's just negative, negative, negative. And then you take that negative energy with you and that's all you're thinking about. And even though you might not think you're thinking about it, it's affecting your subconscious. And that little irritation now irritates you for the rest of the day without you even realizing it.
Yep.
So I'm a true believer in that. So I'm like, the little bit of positivity you could get from somebody, hey, how you doing? Just making sure you're still hanging in there, you know, just breaking their balls or whatever, saying something funny or witty, whatever it is. If you're not witty, just say something nice and kind. That's it. Give them some positivity. Be like, yo, if you need something, you want to vent, you need me to bring you anything, some soup, or you need me to bring you some ginger tea or some lemons, something, or I got toilet paper. If you can't get out of bed to go get it, I can go drop it off for you. This is what friends are for. This is what family members are for. And these times of crisis. So it's just a little odd when you have these people that claim they're close with you or you're really good friends and then they act like that. I don't think they're doing it intentionally. Let me be very clear about that. But I do think it says a lot about our society as a whole. And people would much rather go to social media and post about things and do the gossip thing instead of doing the more humane thing, which is be there, put the phone down and go check on somebody, or take the phone and actually use it for good instead of recording something. And then this, obviously, I'm talking about other stuff. When you see something bad happen and people pull out their phones and they're recording instead of like actually trying to help. It's such a fucked up society that we live in. And obviously, one man can't really change the world, but you can do your part in trying to help influence people and stuff like that. So that's just my message. And it was a little frustrating to see Rebecca like that, where she was getting texts and people were acting like, yeah, you know, I heard you, you know, you might have gotten sick and I just wanted to check on you. And like, motherfucker, bitch, it's almost 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
Where were you when you first heard about it? Like, yeah. You heard about this 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. And 3 weeks ago. Tech messages are free, bro. I mean, they're not, but yeah. They are. Like, it don't cost anything. That's what I have that gripe a lot of the times with social media because, I mean, I work professionally in social media. It's become, you know, not something personal for me because it's business. It's a job. I only think about it in like numbers terms, really. But, you know, tapping, you know, liking somebody's shit or commenting, yo, this is awesome, is free. Absolutely free. That could mean the difference between someone getting $100 and $500 for sponsorship. Like, it's those little things like that people can just be so petty and up in their own shit and not realize that. I think you're right, where as a society, hopefully we can kind of bring our way back to that level of humanity where it's deal with us how you would deal with us in person and forget all this other nonsense.
Yeah, I agree. At the end of the day, man, I'm just glad she's healthy now. And now same. Thank you. And now she's talking about it. Obviously, we did the podcast and she made her post after we did the podcast and she was getting tons of messages because a lot of people were sick. And guess what they were doing? They were hiding in the closet because they were scared of what people might say to them or how they might treat them. So, yes, you're supposed to quarantine yourself for 14 days. Now, after the 14 days, for people to still be treating you like you have the plague is such a weird thing to me. It's like, well, if I change my clothes, I wash my hands, you saw me wash my hands, I did the 20-second rule, I'm still giving you your space. And even if I did touch something, I'm not wiping my nose, even though I'm clean now. So even if I did wipe my nose or I did cough, I don't have anything. So why are you still freaked out and treating X, Y, and Z person like they're a walking plague? I don't know. That's just me. I mean, I hang out with her. Now we can actually do stuff. And, you know, I like to do stuff. So that's just me. And, I'm not sick. So if people want to treat me like that, and I've had people, I tell people, like, I'm down to train. If you want to come train, come train. We'll keep it low key. But I'm not going to go posting stuff. I'm not going to go doing X, Y, and Z, go train with mad random people. I'm like, yo, if we're training, it's just us.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, I'm training with you, you're training with him, he's training with him, she's going here, you're going here.
Dish.
Yeah, so that's craziness. But at the same time, I'm like, yo, I'm down to train. This is my situation that I'm dealing with. If you're okay with that, we can work out together. Just letting you know what the consequences are and letting you know that I'm good. I've been in my whole quarantine with her. So that's been my thing. So if I were to get a fight, it would be me and my select training partners, and we'd be here bunkered up, hanging out, or they'd be at the house. Whenever we're done training, they go back to their place and go back and forth like that. This way it's not a whole big mix of this, and this. And I get that, minimizing flattening the curve. So I'm okay with that. But I just think when people are like super weird about things, I get that people are scared and for right reasons. But I think if you're gonna follow the guidelines and use that as your end all be all, then it should be like that on both fronts. Don't be one way about it and then be a different way about it. Cause then it's just like, well, what are we doing? Then we might as well, no one should ever interact with anybody because we all might be infected. That's just my two cents on the whole thing.
Yeah. No, I think there's a stark line between being a realist and being naive. And I think a lot of people who are going out into public to grocery stores and grabbing things, and maybe you forget to wash your hands and you wipe your face, that's a lot more risky than you and two training partners who are getting in, you and your brother train, you immediately go clean up, you clean the mats because it's your own gym. You know, you guys are so much more hyper cautious than probably anyone else walking around, you know, going to the grocery store, that I think it's a little naive to kind of be sitting here and being like, oh, I'm not going to go, you know, train with this person because their significant other got sick, but now they're okay. You know, it's like, let's play a numbers game here. How many people have it and have no fucking idea? Just because we're not getting tested. And
dude, I mean,
that's the reality of life, you know?
Yes. And I saw a post on an interview with a mic that was hot. And I don't know how true it is, but I would imagine it to be relatively spot on. And the post said in California, there were about 7,000 cases of people who actually tested positive, right? So people that tested positive, and then USC and then LA County PD or whatever, hospital or lab. They did tests themselves, and they said based on what they believe, they think the infection rate is more so closer to 221,000 to about 442,000 people in California, that LA region. And I'm like, that's probably very true because people, obviously they're not as close in proximity as us out here in New York City, but I would still imagine the places that people are all still going to and touching stuff and blah, blah, blah. It's very possible because one, we're not all getting tested. We can't get tested even if we wanted to. So the odds of you possibly have been infected are extremely high. And the mortality rate that that video was trying to actually depict was saying, well, the mortality rate based on that number that they actually did not disclose was about 0.1 to 0.3%. So that's a pretty significantly low number. Obviously, I'm not saying any deaths is good. So I know some people are going to hear that and say like, well, they died. Motherfucker, they died.
How Jermaine like, hates yeah, people.
Yeah, and that's not saying that. I'm just putting out the statistics of the number, the same things that people are looking at and reading. And it's just good to do your own research and think for yourself, man. Think for yourself. Don't just go blindly in there thinking that you have to be like in a bunker and hidden out from daylight because you think the fear of if you go outside a bird box, if you look at something, you might be infected and going crazy type of shit. I don't know. It's just, we're in wacky times, man. And I just wish my garage was bigger and I would have a 2-car garage, 3 or whatever the case may be, 2.5-car garage. And I would have this whole thing done and I would have my groups of 4 to 5 people come in and we would just have a fucking quarantine all-star training session every day. So that's just the way I am. And obviously, like I said, I went through my quarantine, even though I was never sick or had any symptoms. Yeah, you could be asymptomatic. Yeah, I know that, fucko. But does that mean I'm contagious 24/7, you know, 24/7, 365 days of my life? No, nobody knows that. If that's the case, we should never be touching anything or anyone, right? So what are we talking about here? We're talking about the facts that are actually given to us and going by those guidelines. I'm good to go. And I think being that we've been away and home for well over a month now at this point, I think I would like to think that most of us are pretty good to start working out with each other and being okay to get something, some type of normalcy again. And I can't imagine what it's going to look like when we do get the go ahead to start going back into everyday life. It's no more handshakes. It's going to be all elbow bumps and head nods.
Yep.
And gang gangs.
Hey man, I'm antisocial as fuck. I'm gonna love it. I'm gonna love it. It's gonna be great.
Yeah.
But so final two things for me would have to be watch less news, check out the pound for pound bracket on anicflooringpodcast.com. Little plug there. Follow me at Cody Merrill right here on all platforms. Control what you can control. Don't follow the news. Go out there and be better today. Aljo, I'm gonna dump it over to you. Close us on out.
As always, thank you guys for tuning in. Remember, if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit or spin it back, fist baby. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay tuned. We got a lot of content coming your way, and I cannot wait till the funk cape is done and you guys can enjoy some more tutorials. And like I said, we're gonna have a funk academy online for you guys who are just Joe Smoes or just your everyday John Doe's that want to learn, or everyday Mary Lammy. I don't know, I just made that name up. But if you want to learn, I got to have some hot fire, some good shit for you guys to really start learning and upping your game and for self-defense. See you guys soon. Thanks for tuning in. As always, stay safe, stay healthy.
That's the show.
Peace.
You ain't got to go home, but you got to get to stepping. And remember, we bring the noise because the people want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.